Hey everyone, welcome to our new podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Gillespie.
And I am your other host, Dan Wyatt. We are far from qualified, and this is Into the Controverse. Yeah, we're here. This is a podcast.
Episode one. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, recording stuff. Don't know what we're doing, but we're here, and it's going to be fun. We're going to be talking about The Nun. It's a 2018 film. It was the fifth movie that came out, like, you know, in the Conjuring universe, but it's actually the first chronologically. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're going to be talking about it first. Unfortunately, this one, like, didn't really have any real-life events that is based upon. This one is pretty much straight fiction.
Okay.
And, which made it a little weird, but it'll be all right. We're going to talk about it anyways. It takes place way back in 1952. We got three like main characters that we follow throughout the film. It stars Damien Bashir as Father Burke, Thaisa Farmiga as Sister Irene, and Jonas Bloquet as Frenchie. And, you know, Thaisa Farmiga, that's her older sister, is Vera Farmiga.
Right.
And that is Lorraine Warren. And I sat through the movie thinking to myself, I was like, man, she really looks like Lorraine. And I was like, that's really weird. Like, that could be her daughter, and it's her younger sister by many, many years.
Shout out to Vera. That's kissing Kate Barlow.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Bro, Holes was glorious. I watched that movie like 4,000 times. But super cool sister actors in the same universe.
We'll do a Holes podcast next. Okay, sorry.
We'll do a 20-part podcast about Holes, the movie. So The Nun, directed by Corin Hardy, who didn't really have any other movies that he directed that are notable, I guess.
Okay.
Produced by James Wan, who is the executive producer on pretty much all of the Conjuring movies. So I like that guy. He does some good stuff. I don't know about Corin. Corin's kind of, he's on the fence. But this movie had a production budget of $22 million. Which isn't a lot. I mean, I think there's some huge Hollywood movies that have so much more.
Yeah.
But a worldwide gross of $366 million, which for some reason, that's the highest of any Conjuring movie. Like, this one just topped the charts. It's number one out of the eight for some reason.
That's sick.
I'm not alluding to anything by talking condescendingly about it, but yeah, made a lot of money.
Sure.
So we watched this movie like a week ago, sat down, watched it. I had never seen it before.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I had either. I think that was my first time.
Yeah. So I really didn't have motivation to see it, I don't think. But now I do. So, we watched it about a week ago. And what we're going to do each week for the episodes is alternate who does the research. So who does the majority of the talking. So I got first. So... Which was pretty easy, though, because there's no really, like, true life events to look up.
Right, you're right.
so it wasn't a hard gig, so hopefully the next one will be harder, and I won't have to do it. But we're gonna run down the movies, and then once we get to the real life talking points, we're gonna go into that.
Yeah.
And give our opinions on it, or whatever. And again, like I said, this one, not based on true events, so there's not a whole lot of stuff on that part to talk about.
Yep.
But we're gonna run down the movie nonetheless.
I'm gonna go ahead and give a spoiler alert.
So spoiler alert, obviously if you have not seen the movie, we're gonna be discussing it in length. Okay, so go watch it. You can rent it on like all your favorite, you know, platforms or least favorite. iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, Google Play. All the nice little greedy companies that make you rent movies in 2021.
Unfortunately, at the time of recording this, unfortunately, it's not on Netflix or Hulu or anything like that right now.
Even if you pay for a streaming, you still can't watch it for free. Super cool. 2021, man.
It's that good of a movie.
It's too good. You can't just stream it for free, you mongrel. And then also these movies do have some pretty graphic stuff, graphic depictions of things that we're going to be discussing. So trigger warning on that stuff. You can actually look up each individual movie and it'll tell you what kind of trigger, you know, are in the movies.
Yeah. So this one's rated R. I think many of them are rated R.
Yeah. Probably all of them, but we'll find out for sure with each episode.
Yeah.
So jumping right into the movie, it starts off with a year on the screen. It goes back to 1952, like I said earlier, in Romania. We got two nuns that are living at Saint Carda's Monastery, which is is a real life monastery. It was founded in the 1200s in southern Transylvania. Jeez. Which is, that was a while ago. That's like the Crusades, you know.
Home of Dracula and stuff like that. You know, I know a little bit about Transylvania.
I've seen the Hotel Transylvania movies.
Right.
It's probably shout something out Adam like Sandler. That. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, so it's still standing today, mostly. It was, you know, bombed in World War II, so just not like, you know, specifically, but just it also got bombed because they were bombing
crazy.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the only part is that's still standing is the church. So that is still functions as a church for like a Lutheran evangelical group. So it's still being used, which is pretty cool. That's a really, really old building that's being used still. However, the movie was not shot there because of the bombings, you know, because it's not really intact. But it was still shot in Romania, like at several like historical sites, which was pretty cool. So we still have some historical, you know, some sightseeing going on. But yeah, so two nuns in the Saint Carta Monastery. I'll say that right eventually. Santa Carta. They were attacked by, you know, some force. We didn't really see anything, but they were going down like a long tunnel, and they opened up a door, and then wham, there's like some horrible growling sounds. Like, we didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
But just some really guttural, nasty sounds came out, and like one of the nuns gets grabbed, dragged away.
Like bloody hand event going on right there, I think.
There's some nasty stuff.
Yeah.
And the nun says something along the lines of, like, you know what you have to do, like the you know, just the generic movie stuff. So the other poor nun runs for her life from the dog sounding growls that are coming from the thing, and promptly jumps out of the window and hangs herself.
Right.
And that's the opening of the movie. We got some weird stuff, and then a nun hangs herself, and that was wonderful, wonderful times. And then it cuts to Frenchie, you know, our boy Frenchie, main character. He's just waddling down the stream, bringing some supplies like food and stuff. And
he's the comic relief character.
Yeah, for sure. Frenchie, yeah. But apparently he lives in the town over, and he delivers supplies, and he's found the nun. He was the first person to find the nun. She looked like she had been there for a while.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, when we
had blood dripping.
Yeah, when we watched, we're like, how long? Like, how many weeks later is this? Because there were crows like eating her, you know, eyes.
Yeah,
and things.
Yeah. It looked like she'd been there for a long time, but like I said, there was like fresh blood. So we're like, what? pretty weird. But so then we cut to, we're not time jumping though, like I said, we're in 1952, and it cuts to the Vatican, and somehow this incident reached the Vatican, and they summoned Father Burke.
Yeah, I wonder how often nuns commit suicide. I would say probably not very.
I mean, that's fair, I guess.
In
so
1952,
But
you know, news travels fast in 1952.
That's what I was saying.
You'd be surprised.
I was like, how did they find out so quickly? They're like, they're having a meeting, like they're having like a roundtable discussion about this incident.
Yeah.
So they summon Father Burke, and they tell him, they're like, hey man, you got to go check this out. Some weird stuff's happening at Saint Carta. So they also summon a nun novitiate, which is a novice nun. She's not, she hasn't taken her vows. But she's like a nun in training. So they're like, you, this nun girl, Sister Irene, Farmiga.
Yes, sir. Shout out to Farmigas.
Y'all are going to go investigate this together. And they're like, they're telling Father Berth, they're like, don't even worry about it. She'll help you out. And then he goes up to her and he's like, so you know the area. That's why they're sending me with you. And she's like, no, I've never been there, Father. She's like, so he's like, oh, cool. You know?
Yeah.
But then Sister Irene like kind of asked him like what he does and stuff. And of course he's a father, but he also says the Vatican sends him on these nice little field trips to investigate stuff. And he calls it miracle hunting. So it's like something horrible has happened. They need a miracle, I guess, is what he's alluding to. But yeah, so Sister Irene and Father Burke, they're going miracle hunting to Saint Carta.
I will say, you know, of all the things that I just genuinely loved about this movie, I will say sincerely, Father Burke was a good character. I liked his depiction. Yeah.
Yeah. He had a really cool accent. I'm not really sure what it was. It wasn't Romanian.
No idea.
Which I don't know what that sounds like either. But no, Father Burke, The acting was good, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah, so they fast travel to Romania, however that happened in 1952, and they meet up with they meet up with Frenchie, because he's the only one that found them. You know, he was the first person to discover them.
The nun.
Yeah. Frenchie. Yeah. But yeah, so they, and like, they're in like a pub of some sorts, and all the people are like freaking out that they're there, and they're, and then whenever they do talk to Frenchie, he's like, no, I'm not going back up there. You know, he's like, there's some spooky stuff up there.
Yeah.
He's
after he provides the comic relief of hitting on the,
there was some comic relief. He thought Sister Irene was a little bad. So he was taking his shots. And she was like, I'm a nun, by the way. She wasn't wearing her thing. She was wearing like street clothes. So it's like, it's not his fault.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
He would have done it anyways. She was wearing her robes. But yeah, so they're like, Mr. Frenchie man, you're going to take us to the Abbey, which is the monastery. And Abbey, I had to look it up because I had no idea. But an Abbey is literally just monks or nuns that, you know, occupy a church building. So they, you know, Father Burke and Sister Irene, they tell Frenchie, they're like, hey man, you have to take us. No one else saw the nun. No one else takes supplies up there. You're the guy. So he's like, all right, well, you know, whatever, I guess I'll go. So they walk through the forest. It's creepy. They see some tombstones, you know?
Yeah.
And they're all from World War II. I'm pretty sure is what, I'm pretty sure that's what, well, actually, no. It was in the plague, because they had the bells on the tombstones for
if they buried someone
alive.
Foreshadowing. Yeah. So, I don't remember. Did that reveal happen right there, or did it happen later? Where they talked about the...
No, they said it.
Said it then? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So they revealed the fact that there's little bells attached to the graves with a string that goes down into the caskets.
Because that's legitimate. Like during the plague, they did that because they would bury people alive on accident, and so they had a little bell that they could ring and say, hey, I'm not dead.
Yes.
And they they would dig them back up. That's horrible. So they're passing through all these graves. It's super creepy. But they do eventually reach the Abbey, and the nun is not there. She's not hanging. And he's like, you know, where's the nun? He's like, Frenchie's like, I took her down, and I put her down in the cold storage.
In the cold room. Room
with all the food and stuff. And so that's disgusting. I would never do that. But and so they're like, all right. So they go down to the cold room, and she's sitting up like on a bench, like very creepily. And he's like, of course, it's another movie trope. He's like, yeah, I didn't leave her like that.
Yeah.
So she moved, apparently, and sat herself up. Super weird. But they find a key. They find a key on the nun's body. Mm-hmm. And
I believe it was in her hand.
Yeah, because he had to unclutch her nasty, decrepit hand to get it off. Disgusting. But we don't really know what that key's to, or they don't. We saw them use it to open the door in the beginning that had the bad demon thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, that killed the other nun. but yeah, then they go inside. They encounter the abbess. Father Burke just addresses her as abbess, and that's literally just like queen mother of an abbey.
Yeah.
And she looks like disgusting and old. She's got like a veil on.
Yeah, so we don't see her face.
Yeah, yeah.
But we
can't really see her face, but her voice is nasty, like really raspy. And she's like, sorry, you can't talk to any of the nuns about this, because we're doing a period of silence, and it's something that nuns do. I don't know how often. I don't know, you know, but from a certain time in the evening till the morning, they can't talk to anybody.
Sort of a vow of silence, kind of.
Yes. Yeah. They're in prayer. So he's like, I really need to investigate this. And she's like, you know, piss off. You can just spend the night here.
Piss off.
You know, you can spend the night here. Talk to him in the morning. How about that?
Yeah.
You know, tough guy. She's all being bad because she's the abbess or whatever.
And that's when, you know, we promptly just kind of said to ourselves, you know, we would never stay the night that we would leave. And
it's
that would
terrible.
Be the end of it.
Yeah. It's a really creepy looking place. Obviously it's like a, you know, decrepit monastery, but they do, you know, it goes to nighttime, and they're going to spend the night, talk to him in the morning. But Frenchie doesn't. Frenchie leaves.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know what, guys, I'll come back in a couple days. I'm not trying to stay here.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's terrible. But of course, as he's returning to the village, he gets attacked by a demon of some sorts. I don't think it's not like a nun. It's not the nun, but it's some sort of demon, and he's walking through the forest with the bell with the bell tombstones, you know.
Yeah.
But
he escapes.
He escapes. Yeah, he's fine. He gets back to the village. I mean, he's probably mentally scarred forever, but he's fine. Physically, he's all right.
You're not speaking from experience or anything.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And then I think Burke has some nightmares, I think. So he's like telling Irene about it the next day, and it turns out that Burke exercised a child at some point in his past, and the child died.
Mm-hmm. Squats and super, you know, Supermans and...
Oh, yeah.
Burpees and things, yeah.
Yeah, so the body... That's one of the things
calisthenics.
About...
There was a lot of calisthenics whenever he exercised.
That's one of like the worst things about movies where there's exorcisms and stuff is that their body contorts horribly and does all these horrible things. Gets thrown against walls, gets slammed into the ground. Segue, yeah. And they live after it. They're like, hey, we got the demon out, buddy. Your body's good. You know, like that makes no sense. But so I did like that. The kid died. I didn't like the kid died. That's not why
Kid died. You're like, now that's what should happen in the movie. Yeah.
I mean, it was more realistic mm-hmm. because if dude's body is cracking and doing all those crazy things, they probably shouldn't make it out.
Yeah.
So
the kid, Daniel, right? Daniel was the kid.
Yes. That... Yeah. Daniel was a little boy that he exercised a demon out of and he didn't make it. So he's being kind of like haunted by that. He's having some bad dreams. He's seeing things. He's hearing things. And it haunts him.
And he, like, you know, they make it seem like he feels sort of guilt for that even happening. You know, he feels extremely guilty that he died. Like,
obviously,
couldn't help him.
Wasn't his fault, but it's a burden on him.
Yep.
You know, he probably carries a lot of weird things, but that's what we're shown. And then they're just kind of like, they're kind of hashing it out, and he's telling her about his past. So she kind of reveals how she became a nun, and she reveals that, like, when she was younger, she had these premonitions, these visions of stuff happening that always ended with, quote, Mary points the way, and end quote. And that was just the probably the dumbest thing that I've ever heard. That was the most just cosmically bad setup way to address, you know, I don't know. It was just dumb. That was really cringy. That was probably my least favorite part of the movie, was when she is talking about these super serious visions she has, and she's just like, yeah, man, every time they end, it just ends with Mary points the way, and I don't know what that means. You know?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, super, super cringe.
But because of these visions, the church took interest in her, so she's a, you know, she's a nun novitiate. So she's,
okay, yeah.
She's being trained to be a nun because of these super epic Mary visions. Mother Mary, beautiful. So not only I think they had that discussion before they went to sleep,
mm-hmm.
and in the night Father Burke, coincidentally, after talking about Daniel, sees Daniel. He wakes up and this little boy is running through the monastery,
yeah,
and he's freaking out because he thinks it's Daniel. And so
he starts, guess what, following him.
Yeah, like, of course. Yeah. He starts running through this empty monastery, chasing after this little boy. Like, he sees his legs, he sees an arm, he kind of sees his face, you know. He's chasing him through all this stuff. Of course, chases him into the spooky woods with the tombs. And he ends up getting, like, trapped and falls into...
Like, pushed. Yeah, pushed
yeah,
into.
Yeah, pushed into an open grave and buried alive.
Yeah, this is where you have to kind of, you know, if you haven't suspended your belief already, he's pushed into an open grave that's then closed and reburied, and the grass has grown over it, so it's not like it was, you know, freshly
done. Yeah, it was kind of weird. We didn't really see, we saw Daniel running around, but
yeah,
the force that pushed him and covered him up was not seen. And, you know, so he's freaking out. He's ringing the bell and screaming and stuff.
This is some people's worst fear. Like,
being buried alive. Claustrophobia, and then also just being buried alive specifically is a fear.
And considering those things, he was very calm in the situation. So he had, like, the presence of mind to sort of, you know, not hyperventilate and get a match so he could see. And...
Oh, well, that's kind of dumb, though, getting the match, I think, because that's...
We're gonna burn more
oxygen. Yeah.
Well, sure, that's very true. But for,
so he was clear-headed.
It let us see for
that's
the movie.
True, yeah.
So he
was clear-headed, but he didn't do the best thing he could have done.
Yeah. He just started ringing that bell and screaming for Irene, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So somehow Irene was awoken, and she went outside looking for him because he wasn't in the bed, you know, across from her in the room. And she hears the bell, and she hears some kind of sounds or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, there was a very convenient shovel off to the side, and she used the shovel, got him out. It was great, whatever. But Father Burke was buried on top of another grave, and inside of that casket, there was an unknown man and a bunch of books, like very conveniently placed books, mm-hmm. you know. And he stated, you know, man, we could probably use those books to find out what the hell's going on. And I was like, wow, very that's another terrible line.
Yeah, true.
The shovel, the books, very convenient.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they go back to the monastery, happy-go-lucky, like nothing happened. They're just cool. They're going back on the investigation, back on the grind.
This movie.
They're very cool with everything that's going on. But I mean, it's his job, right? He goes into these bad situations. You know, he's an experienced father and miracle hunter. So, I mean,
yeah.
You can't be spooked by that. You just get over it.
I suppose. I don't believe it.
back on the grind. This is every day. This is his job, man. But yeah, so the next day they go back to the abbey, and the abbey is cloistered, which means no one but the nuns can be in it, which is very sad. They have a bunch of very conveniently placed rituals that they during this movie. But it's so like Irene, this
story was made up completely.
Yeah, it's almost as if this was, you know, no source material, just, you know, they wrote it as they went. But so Sister Irene is able to go in, and she actually meets some nuns. We see some nuns for the first time in the movie.
Right.
And no one really wants to talk to them. They all kind of look like, you know, like bashful. They don't really talk. But she talks to Sister Oana, and she kind of tells her about the history of the abbey. So she tells her that during the Middle Ages was when, you know, this was built, the castle, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that, now monastery, was built by a duke in the Middle Ages that was obsessed with, you know, with the occult, with hell, demons, Lucifer, all that. And the demon, or the duke, like, he killed a bunch of nuns, killed a bunch of people, all for this big ritual to summon a demon. And he opened up a rift.
In, yeah,
this like, is underneath the
meat of the demon exposition. It's like right here. He's just giving you the entire end of the movie, like what's gonna, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. We're getting to where it started and how it has to end.
Right.
Yeah. So he's like summoning. He's doing this crazy ritual. Some dark demon is coming out of the ground, a rift, like that's in the bottom of
the center of the castle, room, and like the floor of the center of the room. Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, the Knights Templar just bust in there and just stab the hell out of them. So the Knights Templar were like, that's the 1100s. Like that's whenever they were established. So it's sometime during the Crusades, obviously, is when this was taking place. And like I said earlier, like the Saint Carta mm-hmm. monastery,
yep.
Was founded in the 1200s, so probably somewhere around there.
Yeah,
but Knights Templar bust in there, stop the ritual, stab the dude a bunch of times, and they seal the rift with a vial filled with the blood of Jesus Christ.
Yes,
and our that's Lord what, and that's Savior. What Sister Oana tells, you know, is telling her. Which I'm like, you know, what the hell? That's insane.
Random.
It's been 1,200 years and we have a vial of Jesus Christ's blood or whatever. So, you know, of course I had to look into that. Like, look if there was some kind of relic.
Yeah.
And there is. There isn't just, like, a vial of blood that they're like, oh, that's Jesus's. You know, that doesn't exist. But in Belgium, though, there is a vial that's held in a I think basilica, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And it holds a cloth that is said to have the blood of Jesus Christ on it. It is supposed to be
is that Jesus' shroud? Is that, or is that something else that I
No. Okay. This was a cloth that was said to have cleaned Jesus off after he was crucified and laid to rest. Like, that's what this is supposed to be.
Okay.
Like, after they took him down off the cross and put him in the tomb. Like, this is, that's where this originated from. And, however, you know, this holds no historical bearings. Like, that cloth was brought to Belgium, after the 12th century crusade, which is very old. I mean, it's a very old artifact for sure, but there's no text in the Bible stating that, something about this cloth or that his blood was preserved. And there's also just no known record of it existing before arriving in Belgium.
Yeah.
So
meaning that the vial was just totally made up for yeah, plot convenience. Yeah, yeah. And
no, so there's no historical vial filled with Jesus's blood.
Yeah.
They just kind of, that was just a movie thing. So. Yeah.
I'm really interested to see, you know, how often throughout this series we experience sort of like critical pieces of the plot, like what they'll use eventually to sort of, or what is used to keep the demon at bay in this one. I'm interested to see how often we'll see critical plot pieces that are just completely made up with no real connection to real life. I think that'll be funny.
I don't think it's going to happen nearly as much as it is in this film.
Yeah,
because there's no true events, so yeah. They just, yeah, so hopefully not as much as this, but yeah, so blood of Jesus Christ, fake, you know. There is a pretty really old artifact claiming to be something like that, but yeah, don't know if it's true, probably not, but not up to me to decide, I guess. So another World War II thing was, so that was, you know, obviously that was a long time ago. That was the 1200s or so, whenever they sealed the rift, killed the Duke that was deviling, doing some devilish stuff.
Right.
So the reason that they're having problems again is because she, you know, she says back in World War II, the bombings opened up the rift. I mean,
I like the reference. That's okay.
Yeah. I mean, we've got some historical action going on here.
Yeah.
How it, I don't really understand how it opened up the rift, because it was some crazy, like crazy ritual where he had to like sacrifice a bunch of nuns, and like he had all this crazy, these crazy markings on the ground.
Building a burr because of the bombs.
But then the bombs hit like, you know, 2 miles away, and then the rift is back open. But it is what it is. So yeah, so we're getting some leaky evil coming out of the rift now because of the bombings. And you know, this was only like less than 10 years after World War II, 1952. Okay. So it's taken 10 years for stuff to get really bad, I guess.
Sure. Or yeah, maybe it got so bad that, you know, the first nun who did her.
Yeah, did, yeah. The, well, deed. They just didn't know. They didn't know about this going on until now.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
But so yeah, she explains, we get the whole backstory on the bad and why it's happening again. And then we cut back to Father Burke. He's reading back, you know, at his little, at where they were staying, and he's reading those super convenient books that they found in the tomb underneath where he was buried. And he discovers that the demon, he's fairly certain that the demon that they're dealing with is Valak. And the reason for this is because there were some snakes that happened. What's happening to everyone is they're basically getting preyed on like their worst fears kind of thing, or weaknesses. And those are what he reads as attributes of Valak. So he's like, must be Valak. You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
So Valak is really the only true part. I don't want to say true, but kind of true part of this movie is because there's actual things about Valak, you know, like texts and stuff.
Okay.
Like going back to like 15th century grimoires is the first mentionings of Valak. And there's not a ton of information past that. But there's like a ton of occultists and demonologists that claimed he was a president demon. He had the power to summon, control serpents. And my favorite part of the movie is that they made Valak the nun, like, you know, that he looks like a nun. But like back in those grimoires, he was described as an angelically winged boy riding a two-headed dragon.
Like every nun that I've ever met. That's,
yeah. That's, yeah. That's, but yeah. But literally the drawings are, he looks like Cupid, but
right. Yeah.
But on a two-headed dragon,
a winged boy. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So never in the history of grimoires or texts about Valak has he been a nun. But producer James Wan stated that he came up with the nun persona, like, just kind of out of the blue. not really any outside influence.
That's great. So this is the fifth movie that was made, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fifth movie that was released.
That was released. Okay. And, yeah. And The Nun was a character, a side sort of character or story that we saw in the Conjuring movie.
Yeah. Yeah. The Nun, you know, appeared in other films very briefly. And I think because it was just popular, that character was popular. They went back and made a prequel, and then that's when they tagged it as Valak, I guess. And they used Valak attributes
Made a lot of money doing it, too. That's pretty interesting. Okay.
But the Warrens' son-in-law, though, Tony Spera, did tell some reporters that there was a nun phantom that Ed and Lorraine experienced in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
While visiting like an English church. So, you know, I mean, there's something, there's a spooky nun. So, I mean, he may have drawn from that, but he said he didn't. So maybe he didn't, but it is what it is. We have Valak the nun, but yeah. So now, we've learned that it's Valak. We've learned that the big rift needs to be sealed or else. And Frenchie, you know, so Frenchie's heading back. It's been like, it's only been like a day or two, it's 2 days, and Frenchie's just, he's coming back to the trail. He's like, well, I guess I go better check on my friends, you know, surely nothing bad has happened since I got attacked in the woods,
right?
God. So he's on his way, and so Irene has been talking to Sister Olana, and then all of a sudden, like, the nuns are freaking out and they're all running to a certain part of the monastery, and they drag Sister Irene in there, and they're like, you know, we all have to pray, it's coming, Valak is coming, we have to pray to ward off the demon.
Yeah.
They're all sitting in like it's actually a really cool scene because all the nuns are in the black robes, but she's wearing a white robe because she's a novitiate.
Yeah.
And they're all in a circle around her. So that was a pretty cool scene.
Yeah.
That
was they had an overhead shot looking down at she's in the center of the room. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's maybe five or seven nuns around. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
So thematically, that was one of the cooler scenes for sure. And, they're praying, like, the building starts shaking, we got all this...
We're getting into the climax of the movie, right?
Yeah.
Right here.
Valak is revealing itself, basically, and nuns are getting tossed, a bunch of nuns get slammed into the wall, and, you know, audible neck cracking.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's killing these nuns, and she is, you know, freaking out.
Yeah, she continues to pray.
Yeah, she doesn't get thrown, and she's just, like, she kind of stumbles a little bit there, and she's freaking out because... all this stuff's happening, but she gets back on the grind. She starts praying again, and you know, and it kind of seeming it settles down a little bit, and then, you know, bust in Father Burke and Frenchie.
And she got a pentagram. I think so.
It's some kind of scratch. her robe got partially ripped off, and, you know, Valak, like,
as she
maimed
was praying.
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she just kept going strong. Like,
she killed
hardcore. It. But then, you know, bust in Father Burke and Frenchie, and they're like, what the hell's going on? And she's like, Valak's coming. Like, Valak's here. We've been praying. We're like a couple of them died. You know, we're trying to ward them off.
Yep.
And Father Burke and Frenchie are just like, who's been praying? And she's like, me and the other nuns. And, you know, and this is the twist of the movie.
Yeah.
This is where you hit the, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And she turns around and the room is empty. There was no other nuns.
Yeah.
You know.
There was a dead body on the ground.
There was a dead nun. Yeah. It was Olana. It was the one that had discussed everything to her.
Yeah.
And so there was no nuns.
Yeah.
She was basically having a vision.
Right.
Of all the nuns.
She had the vision of that Olana, you know, speaking
to
her.
Her.
And
yeah.
then all this happened, you know, in the next few minutes. But then when Burke and Frenchie get there and they reveal that she's the only one there, she shows the Olana, and it's like a rotted,
oh yeah, you know. it's like it's been dead for a long time.
Yeah.
so we get that, you know, we get the picture of, you know, the nuns weren't there because Father Burke and Frenchie never saw a nun. They just saw the figure of the abbess talking to them,
right?
Which is kind of weird because the abbess has been dead as well.
Mm-hmm.
The abbess was dead the whole time too.
Yeah,
but never saw the nuns. But yeah, so all the reveal of the history, she was just having visions of the nuns that did live there.
Yep.
And so they've been dead for probably like maybe 10 years, because we're like almost 10 years after World War II when the rift got opened back up. So I imagine they got killed pretty fast by Valak.
Sure.
And but yeah, so they reunite, and it, you know, they figure that the nun at the very beginning that you know, hung herself, she was the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I mean, I don't know. It makes me think of like how long in between Frenchie's like deliveries, like how long were the, because maybe no one was receiving them. Maybe he was just putting them in the cold room for them, because there is a door from the cold room to the monastery. So yeah. Because you can't go in there if you're not,
yeah,
you know, official. So yeah, really weird. It makes, you know, it's kind of a plot hole.
Yeah.
Because the food would be stacking up in there and he'd be like, what the hell? They're not using any of the supplies. But plot hole aside, yeah, that was,
I just want to point out about that door too. It did give me the most, you know, like, this is when I audibly was like, you know, this is ridiculous. Whenever they did, that door. So whenever Frenchie had first brought the two into the cold room, you know, Frenchie says, oh, that's the door that the nuns use to get to the monastery.
Yeah.
And they play his voice back over as Father Burke goes into the room.
Oh, no.
and he looks at the door. They play, like, you hear him say it again. And it was just, it was hilarious to
me. Yeah, that was, okay, so that was probably the cringiest, second to the, you know, Mary points the way thing.
Yeah.
But if in a movie you have to play audio as a callback,
yeah,
to get a reference, you don't do it.
Yeah. You have just, that opportunity.
Yeah. Skip, I mean, it. Come on. If someone is watching it and they're the slightest, you know, bit competent, they're gonna understand the reference,
right?
That's terrible. But yeah, so they're back together, they're all having these crazy realizations that all the nuns have been dead, Valak is here to mess stuff up, and where did they find the blood of Christ? Where was it at? It was in the, okay, they used the key.
Yeah
So they're sitting there thinking, they're like, well, if they use the blood of Christ the first time, maybe we just, you know, Father Burke's like, that's what we got to do. Maybe that's what the nuns were trying to get to. Turns out, well, bada boom, he was right. And they go out and, you know, to that tunnel from that first scene of the movie, and they go in there and they get the vial. They're like, we gotta seal that rift just like the Knights Templar did back in the good old days.
Right.
And then Irene, she has like a little vision. She tells Father Burke, she's like, God is calling on me right now to make my solemn vows as a nun. She's like, now is the time.
Is this the best time?
Yeah. God is like, God called upon her, said there's no other time like today, and she did it. So mm-hmm. Father Burke, you know, he elevated her to the status of nun, which he can do because he is a father, he's a priest, and he does it like in the chapel. Mm-hmm. So it's legitimate, it's cool, he can do that because he's, you know, he's a priest. So they go down into like the basement of the church or whatever, where the rift is, where the original ritual was done, where Valak came out of, and it's this huge pentagram on the floor,
center of a, like a circle room type.
Yeah, it's really weird layout, but I imagine they probably were buildings that old.
I will say again, we kind of reached the climax point of the movie, then like a lull as she became like an actual nun, and then now we're back into the climax where we're going to see Valak for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will say, like, as this part of the movie is happening, the layout of this, of where they are underneath, it's very confusing because mm-hmm. rooms will fill up with water and get thrown, you know. So anyway, just it could have been orchestrated like a little bit better as far as how we were presented this scene.
Yeah, because we're going from scene to scene, and I don't know what room we're in. Everything looks the same, everything looks weird. But yeah, that's pretty dumb. But we're in the main room, and Sister Irene promptly gets lured into the pentagram and possessed by Valak. Like, they kind of, and they get split up like in these scenes, like while they're going to seal the rift, it's all pretty fast. And like you said,
did they make the decision to split up? I feel like they all went separate ways down a hallway.
I don't think they could have.
Yeah.
But I think it was more they were all having problems.
Sure.
Like Irene was getting lured into the pentagram to get possessed. Burke was dealing with Daniel's ghost again.
Yeah.
Like Burke gets wounded. Like Burke gets slammed around by Daniel's ghost. And at the same time, I'm not sure if it was actually the ghost of Daniel or Valak, but Valak, you know, those strong of demons are supposed to have the power to control other spirits.
Yeah.
So he very well could have been controlling Daniel's spirit to harass.
Yeah. My interpretation, like you mentioned earlier, is if this demon was said to have sort of taken on their, you know, people's worst fears or their fears, I think that, you know, similar to like it, you know, if you've seen it, right? Mm-hmm. So how it takes on different forms. That's kind of how I interpreted Daniel in this situation, being sort of, like you said, a vessel. Of the demon, yeah.
Yeah. So we got, you know, Irene is in the pentagram. She's disgusting and possessed, and her eyes are all crazy looking. And she's being like, but she's possessed, but then we see the nun. Like, we see Valak, and she's like, she's got her, like, lifted up in the air, like, choking her and stuff, like, shouting at her in her guttural, nasty voice. and then here comes Frenchie. Frenchie, like, you know, he's like the hero for a moment.
Yeah.
He like comes up behind her and he's got the blood and he like smears it on Valak's face, which apparently is a great demon repellent. I don't know.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. But... And, you know, Valak freaks out and kind of goes away for a second. Only to come back very promptly.
Yeah.
And just like toss Frenchie to the side.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, like there's a room full of water for some reason. we don't know why it's full of water.
Right.
But, you know, Valak is back. Burke is hurt. Frenchie was tossed like hella. Like he was tossed way. We thought he was dead.
Yeah.
You know, he fell down. His body looked crumpled. And then Valak has got Irene again and is just choking her under the water, like drowning her. And then in that little scuffle, like Irene had the blood of, you know, Christ. She had the vial. Like she's got it in her hands now. And it was kind of a cool scene. I mean, like, it was bad, but just in the moment,
yeah,
it was kind of cool. Yeah. Like, she's under the water. She manages to get up, like, get her head above the water, and then she spits the blood. Like, she had the blood in her mouth somehow. Yeah. I don't know how she managed to do that under the water.
Yep, she did.
But she came out, spit it all over Valak's face, and they were in the room with the rift. So,
it was extremely confusing.
Yeah, the blood got on Valak's face, freaked it out, and then she, then she put the rest of the blood, like, in the water, and it, you know, it all cycled down, like, the water spiraled down into the rift, and it shut the rift. And all, you know, all from her spitting in his face, and then just, like, throwing the rest in there. Again, water made no sense. Don't know where the water came from. And then it all just sucked back down into the rift. Where the hell's that rift going, man? So seals the rift, you know, save the day. Frenchie's not dead somehow. He took a hell of a fall. But he's good. He comes over there. He gives her the kiss of life. He resuscitates her. Yep. He probably enjoys it because he's a little devil. He's a little nasty. And then for some godforsaken reason, she's like, "What's your real name?" And he's like, "Maurice."
Maurice.
I don't know why we needed to know
comic
that.
Comic relief. Yeah. I love it.
Like, didn't care at all about his name. So they sealed the rift. Everyone made it out okay. You know, Maurice wasn't dead. Maurice wasn't dead. Burke was okay. He was wounded. He was wounded, but he was all right.
Yeah.
And they're like, "All right, well, mission accomplished. We did it, everyone. We sealed the rift." And then we see them trotting on Frenchie's little horse and wagon back to the village.
Mm-hmm.
And then it zooms in on the back of his neck, and he's got like an inverted cross on his neck, like burn, like kind of like a... not really a tattoo, but just a
little scar. Yeah.
Yeah. Scar. And we're like, "Oh shit." You know, we don't really know what that means. You can imply.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the last scene of them, you know, leaving the scene of the crime. But then we have a little time jump to end the movie, and it's 20 years later. We're at a university seminar in Massachusetts. I don't know why we had to. Oh no, we do. Oh, we need to know that. Never mind. that's fair. That's a call. We'll find out later. We see Carolyn Perrin. She's watching this lecture by Ed and Lorraine Warren, and they are presenting footage of Maurice, and Maurice is possessed, and they're doing an exorcism.
Yeah,
and it's crazy. And I think Lorraine grabs him during the exorcism, and she has one of her visions, like she does in the later movies. And I believe those visions are what caused them to investigate the Perrin farmhouse, which is Carolyn Perrin's family, and what we'll see in a later movie.
And I will say that this flash or like a jump forward to the present day to me was just very unsatisfactory, and maybe my opinion will change sort of as we see the next movie, but it was unsatisfactory because it was like maybe 30 seconds, like, and then that was the end of the movie. I felt like they could have either done away, done away with the idea or something, or made it just a little bit longer to where we get a little bit more clarity or more, you know, insight like into the
kind of closure.
Closure is a good word. Yeah, I just felt like it was just a kind of a cheap, here's 20 or 30 seconds into where we are, and then roll credits. I mean, it was
because it happened really fast, like the fight with Valak and the rift closing and all that, and then them immediately like going away on the wagon, and when then we is zoomed in on his neck and the inverted cross, and then immediately we're in the lecture.
Yeah,
and they're showing him getting exercised,
right?
And and yeah, so I mean, it definitely could have ended better.
It could have, you know, movied better.
Yeah, throughout. It could have been a better movie. That's fair.
I think that, you know, there was a lot of sort of cheap exposition in the writing. You mentioned Alana, the nun that sort of just told Irene everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
the whole history,
the books that they found underneath that specific grave. I mean, and then you have just the classic sort of comic relief with Maurice and things like that. So was it too many, you know, unique or just outstanding elements of this movie, in my opinion?
No, definitely not. I mean, did you have a favorite part though? Was there a favorite part that you just was like, wow, that was pretty good, or no?
No.
No.
I don't think so. There were some cool shots, I think. But, you know, they had, like we mentioned, some circle rooms with whether it was the riff with the pentagram on the floor or the scene with Irene in the center of the nuns. I mean, there were some cool, like, sort of dramatic elements that we got to see throughout the movie that are kind of hard to reproduce, you know, in a podcast. But as far as pieces of the plot or events that happened, is, you know, to me, nothing stands out, right, you know, off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's fair. And we didn't really get, some really good scary scenes, I guess. Like the nun, there was never any, there wasn't sufficient buildup, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just not very scary.
Yeah,
you know?
There wasn't too many scary. No,
there was some good, like I said, like, you know, very good just scenes in general as far as from a movie standpoint, like cool shots, cool technical stuff.
Yeah.
But other than that, not a great movie.
Okay, so I'll say this. I didn't know about the bells on the tombstones.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I guess I'd say that was maybe my favorite thing that was in the movie.
A random historical fact that they added in there. I mean, the bells were cool. What would you give it? Like, rate the movie, you know, out of 10.
A 5.2.
That's harsh. That, I mean, it's fair though.
I would say I don't think it. I wouldn't watch this movie again, until I maybe had seen all of them, and maybe you know, I would just say, my rating. It was a below average movie, and I was just so surprised when we saw the amount of money that this movie made.
Yeah, that's insane.
And I'm interested to hear, you know, you listener, your opinion, you know, your rating, or you know, even look into other ratings of the film, because, you know, we watched it and sort of immediately had similar, we had a conversation after it, and sort of were like, well, there wasn't too many great parts of that movie, but what about you? Would you give it a...
Probably just a five, you know? I think I had a higher, like, view of it immediately after watching it, but now running through it and talking about all of it, I'm like, okay, no, it's fairly bad. Probably a five. Because there were cool scenes, cool shots that I thought was like, that was cool, you know? But so it wasn't just dreadful. Like, I enjoyed watching it, but I can acknowledge that it was a bad movie.
Yeah.
So definitely a 5 out of 10 would be a good rating. And, you know, and also, you know, on this podcast, we also want to talk about, you know, our personal opinions on if we think that the story actually happened and that if the demons are real or if the spirits exist. And unfortunately, you know, with this one, we can't really do that because this is a piece of fiction poo-poo. And I mean, Valak is a, you know, it's written about, but we have nothing to go off of. So I can't even say if Valak is real.
Yeah, this one, like you said, this one's kind of a unique one. And, you know, I haven't researched the rest of the movies. Also, what's interesting about this series is each of us has sort of seen a few, you know, some of the movies, you know, in the past, sort of as they've been released or sometime later. But you can, and you can speak for yourself, but I don't have, like, you know, the last time I watched one of these movies, you know, it would have been at least a year ago, right? So a lot of it is fresh for me. And with this one, when we watch it, it's going to be fresh for me. And with this one, I hadn't seen it before. So I'm sort of going into it with a, open mind, yeah, kind of fresh eyes. So
open, I gotcha. Yeah, and same, I mean, especially, like, The Nun, the Annabelles, I haven't seen them. Yeah. So, like, this is brand new to me. So, hopefully, this is the worst one.
Right,
that's what I was trying to get at. I think the general consensus is that it is the worst one, but it somehow made the most money. I don't know how, I think there was just too much hype, and then a lot of people were disappointed, but they already spent their money.
Yeah.
So, unfortunate for sure, but yeah, that was it. It was a bad movie.
5.1 average between us. Again, interested to hear what you think and sort of if you caught anything when you watched it that we didn't or that we might have gotten wrong, right?
I'm open to criticism. I mean,
we're totally, you know, we've mentioned we are extremely qualified to do these breakdowns and critique and even rate these movies that these people spend, you know, years of their lives working on.
$22 million went into this movie, but it was shit. We're just here talking about it. So what we say probably doesn't matter, but we hope you enjoyed though. We hope it was a good time. We're excited to keep this series going. That was one movie down out of 8.
Yeah, first run
to go.
Yeah. Very, very excited. Next week, we'll dive into Annabelle Creation.
Yeah.
That'll be my episode, so hopefully I can find some interesting things to throw in there. You know, one of the things we've talked about is researching things, you know, anything that happened on the set that could be, you know, strange or...
And nothing happened on this one, of course, because it's a fake movie, so it's not even cool, not even real locations or real stuff, but...
Looking forward to it.
But we're excited. So give us a follow on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, FFQ Podcast. That'll be the best way of reaching out to us and giving us feedback and criticism and just talking about stuff.
Yeah. So. Tweet at us there. You know, Facebook, we're just far from qualified.
Yep.
Just like we are, you know, in everyday life, right? Just far from qualified in general.
Yeah, so. I'm not qualified to do anything. I don't think not a single thing. Thank you guys for listening. We will see you next Sunday, where we will be dropping episode number 2.
Yep. See you there.